Hello everyone, I am Jessica Saxton, the Environmental Education Outreach Leader through United Communities AmeriCorps and the host of Living Downstream. Umpqua Watersheds values both human and ecological diversity. We acknowledge that the land upon which Umpqua Watersheds is located was formerly occupied and tended by various indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Mulala, and others. Their history is intertwined with this place, and we seek to continue to practice stewardship and reciprocity towards the natural environment which indigenous people did for thousands of years prior to European settlement. We celebrate the strengths and perspectives that different people have to offer, and believe that organizations, communities, and ecosystems are all more resilient when they embrace the unique gifts various individuals can contribute. Welcome. Joining us today, I have Ethan Robinson in his role as Pollinator Education and Outreach Specialist, serving at Pollinator Project Rogue Valley. I also have Tegan Carnegie in his role as Community Engagement Leader, serving at UCAN. Thank you guys for joining me. Today, we will be discussing what everyone has been focusing on since joining UCAN AmeriCorps. So why don't we take turns and introduce yourselves?
Thanks for inviting us. My name is Ethan Robinson, and I work at Pollinator Project Rogue Valley in Talent, Oregon.
And I'm Tegan Carnegie, and I'm the Community Engagement Leader at UCAN, and I've been working on all sorts of volunteer stuff.
Wonderful. Thank you, guys. So I guess let's start off with what inspired you to serve with UCAN AmeriCorps. Ethan, do you want to go first?
Sure. So I had never heard of AmeriCorps before about July of last year. But then one of the teachers at Southern Oregon University sent out an email to everyone in the environmental science department and said, hey, this nonprofit in Phoenix, they're looking for someone to serve with AmeriCorps at their site to teach kids about bugs. And I immediately went, I have to do that. So now I'm here.
What about you, Tegan?
Well, for me, it was a pretty similar experience to Ethan, actually. I was in a small group discussion class pursuing my engineering degree. And Karen McGuire and Rochelle... Karen and Rochelle went into my classroom, and we had this project that was basically, here's a bunch of problems that UCAN is facing. Your big, humongous project for this term is to come up with ideas to solve it. And I was stoked for that because it was an actual real life problem that I can actually try to help solve. And after that project, they had this AmeriCorps opportunity that was basically just that project, but an AmeriCorps position. And I was thinking, wow, yes, please. I would love to have a volunteer opportunity where I'm solving problems and coming up with systems. And there's also a really solid art aspect in what I do as well. So there's just all sorts of stuff, and I love all of it.
Wonderful. Thank you. I myself kind of had the same experience. I heard about the AmeriCorps position through my volunteering with Umpqua Watersheds. So I was already volunteering with the organization and found out that they needed an AmeriCorps, and I had never heard of AmeriCorps beforehand. So I jumped on it, and I've been really enjoying my service term. So what have you guys been doing at your sites?
Mind if I kick it off?
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. So as the education and outreach specialist for Pollinator Project, I've been working on activities and lessons for students from kindergarten to senior citizen. And it's been a really interesting experience where I'm putting together these activities and lessons and slowly building a curriculum for my service site to eventually continue using after my service term ends. In addition to that, I've been working with a really wonderful education committee that we've put together here to bring teachers together to put together ideas and actually get our education resources out there. And that all kind of feeds into the events and lessons that we have been able to put on in the past couple of months.
Wonderful. What about you, Tegan?
Basically, what I've been doing is I've been trying to unify all of UCAN's volunteer opportunities into one fluid, easy-to-use system. And what I've got so far is I've written up some policies and procedures for programs that want to incorporate volunteers in their program. And I've worked with programs that are currently trying to get volunteers in the doors. And I put out a social media post on the UCAN page. I'm kind of thinking I should do another one, but in a video format, because the algorithm on Facebook seems to be against me on that. But yeah, so I've made that social media post. I've made those policies and procedures. I've also made an online volunteer interest questionnaire that when you complete it, it links, it sends me an email in the volunteer email automatically. So I also kind of automated that process. So if someone's
Nice.
interested in volunteering, they click a link. Yeah. And there's some other stuff too, but yeah, basically I've been putting together systems to make volunteering more easy and efficient and yeah.
Has that been easy? Because I also have been working on the outreach volunteer portion of it and
Well, putting together the systems that are going to work once we do have volunteers in the doors was, I mean, I wouldn't say it was easy, but it ended up being pretty straightforward what I had to do. But now I'm really deep in the recruitment process, and there's that social media post didn't quite work out like how I wanted, so I'm thinking either flyers or a video or some sort of volunteer event. So, yeah, it's definitely the recruitment process can be a bit
Nice. Do you offer trainings for your volunteers?
I don't personally, but the programs that are taking volunteers have training. I believe Head Start, if I remember right, has a once you get 20 hours in, I think they pay for your first aid and CPR training.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for that. Let's talk about a project you worked on, or a favorite project or experience that you had during your service term that you felt was, amazing and you'd like to share it with the audience.
Well, I kind of wanted to like it kind of leads into something that I wanted to add on to what Tegan was saying with the volunteer recruitment process and helping to get volunteers acquainted with the organization and understanding how to do things. And that is something that I've kind of identified as a real weakness of mine, where I have a lot of trouble with kind of that pitch to people. So that's something I've slowly been working on. And in the meantime, a lot of the projects that I've been working on are more community focused than volunteer focused. One of the most exciting ones was pretty recent with Armadillo Technical Institute, a high school over here in Phoenix that works with students who have had trouble in like the traditional school system. And I was invited there to go and run a class. So I was thinking of what can we do? What's something that could be fun for a bunch of, teenagers who would probably rather be somewhere else. And I was looking at the time of when the lesson would be and thought, huh, I'm gonna give these kids a whole bunch of butterflies to take care of. So I created like an adoption form for these American lady butterflies that we had been raising in our garden. That just they just kind of showed up one day, all the caterpillars, and we've been feeding them their only, well, one of their few host plants, which is Pearly Everlasting, the native kind of shrubby plant. And we took a whole bunch of plants and caterpillars to ATI, Armadillo Technical Institute, and said, hey, each of you gets a caterpillar or a chrysalis, and it's your job to learn about its care requirements. Well, to like record its care requirements. That's what we were talking about during the class. And make sure that this little butterfly has a successful life. And I was talking to the teacher afterwards, and it was kind of a cool little way to improve attendance. Because it's like, oh, if you miss a day, what if that's the day your butterfly comes out? Well, that
That
was
sounds like
great
a lot of
fun.
fun. Yeah. What age group was that?
So these kids, they were high school. I don't know if there was a particular grade because it's small classroom sizes and it's kind of mixed. So you could have had some like 9th and 10th graders in there and some like seniors in there. But and a lot of the lessons that we've actually been doing and producing are designed to work with like a targeted age group, but then be adaptable to other grades and stuff. So that's something that I've had to become familiar with. What's the difference between a third grader and a fifth grader? I'm not
Yeah,
totally sure.
that is tough. Do they get to keep them and then let them go once they've
Yeah, after the so the caterpillar will eat and shed its skin a couple of times, about 5 times while it's a caterpillar. The last time it sheds its skin, underneath is the chrysalis. It'll spend about 2 weeks in that form before it will kind of burst out as a fully formed butterfly. And two fun facts. One, when it comes out of the chrysalis, that is called eclosing. And two, while they're in their chrysalis, they completely liquefy. They just turn into soup. And then when they eclose, they'll release this goop called meconium that I thought it was like blood or something because it's this bright red color, but it's actually just like the leftover soup that they didn't need to turn into a butterfly.
Wow.
Yeah, I had to warn the kids about that. Just like, hey, it's fine. Your butterfly isn't bleeding. It's just that's normal. So teaching kids
You?
about butterfly puberty has been interesting.
It sounds like it. Do you also work with the kids to plant pollinator plants?
Oh yeah. So one class that we taught recently was with Bellevue Elementary School, their 5th grade classes, and we had each student learn about a particular plant, then look at the seeds and parts of the plant under the microscope, and then actually plant it in a little pot that they got to take home, and we gave them the care instructions and told them like which pollinators might be coming to this plant either for pollen or nectar or as a host plant for their caterpillars.
Nice. I have a plant question. Do you know if I was to plant milkweed here in Roseburg, if any of the butterflies would be able to use it as a host plant? Or is it out of their region or travel area, you know?
The travel areas are still kind of being identified. Xerces, they're the invertebrate, they're a national invertebrate conservation group. They have a program going on tracking monarch butterfly food sources and kind of getting a better idea of their range. So the Western monarch population, I imagine that they go all the way up to Roseburg, that sort of area. If you plant, there's narrowleaf and showy milkweed. Those are the two varieties that you can get here that the mother butterfly will layer eggs on, and then the caterpillars will use the milkweed as a host plant. So I think that if you do plant them, then you should still. There's still a chance that you'll see some activity.
Cool. I got some seeds and I think it's a little late this year, but I want to try next year to do some showy milkweed in my garden.
That is an excellent plan.
Well, let's hear from Tegan a bit. Do you have any information you want to add or talk about regarding, your project and some experiences you've had during your service term?
Yeah, I think probably the most fulfilling thing that I've done so far is probably the first couple months or so that I started. I was just kind of thrown into the Make a Difference Day committee, and at the point I was thrown in, it was still just kind of like they had gotten their host sites of where they wanted people to be volunteering at, but they hadn't done much outreach for volunteers or anything. And they needed a way to keep track of volunteers. They needed a way to reach out to volunteers. They needed a way for volunteers to fill in their info and everything. So I kind of just had the opportunity to go through and see what chunks they were missing and just fill it in. I made a Google form for people to fill out. I made a spreadsheet to keep track of all the volunteers. And I had this thing, the system where people would select their top three choices for where they wanted to volunteer. And I would kind of shuffle it around as much as I could on the spreadsheet to make sure someone got into their top three. And I think for the most part, that was a done deal. Like everyone who volunteered got at least in their top three. But yeah, near when it was gonna start, we were only like halfway to the amount of volunteers that we wanted to be at, and I was worried that like people weren't gonna show up, or people like there wasn't gonna be enough people, and so we were just scrambling those last few weeks. But then it ended up working out perfectly, and we had plenty of volunteers, and we had people show up who didn't sign up, which I'm super glad that that happened. So ultimately, it all, like when it all came together during the Make a Difference Day event, and it went pretty swimmingly as far as I could tell. It just the satisfaction from that was immeasurable. Just being a part of something of that kind of scale.
Yeah, I can agree with that. The MLK Day River Cleanup was my first big event that I planned. And I think we had about 30 people register to volunteer. But when the day actually happened, we had over 60. And
Dang.
it's just, I did not expect that many people to show up. We got it done a lot quicker with all that help. And there was tons of kids that were having fun. It was a really good day. And just like you said, the experience afterwards, I mean, it felt really good to be doing all that and getting the community engaged was amazing. Do you have any upcoming events, Tegan, for volunteering?
That's kind of what I'm working on at the moment. I'm thinking about just putting together some sort of event for people who would be interested in volunteering, maybe framing it or like attaching it to something else just to get the amount of people there or maybe piggybacking off of an existing event. So I'm still kind of working that out. There is my boss is having a volunteer recognition event for people who were volunteering with RSVP, which is kind of a seniors-based volunteer program. And so I'm gonna be helping her out with some of that, but that's for the existing volunteers, just as kind of recognition or having a bit of a recognition party kind of thing.
Nice. That's always good to recognize those volunteers. Ethan, do you have any upcoming volunteer events that people could get involved with?
So the events that we have coming up are, well, we have one, well, two this weekend, that should be pretty fun. There's one focused around butterflies and their different food resources, whether it be the host plant for the caterpillars or nectar resources for the adults. But a bit farther off, over during Earth Day, we have a couple of events going on. We're going to be partnering with Southern Oregon University for their Earth Day celebration and putting on some kids' activities, a couple of art things, and we'll have some education materials there so people can become a bit more familiar with the, their native and local pollinators that they might not really know about. Then the following on that Saturday, actually on Earth Day, we have another event that we'll be tabling at, pretty similar with some art projects, but the part that I'm the most excited about is for that particular event, that's upcoming Saturday, well, on Earth Day, is I don't remember the name of whoever made it, but there is a very large wooden, like, cutout thing of a monarch butterfly caterpillar that you stick your face through. It's one of those, and then you can get pictures with it. So figuring out where to put that and helping people get pictures should be interesting, at least. But at the moment, we don't really have pollinator project specific events in the next couple of weeks that we have volunteers coming to. Instead, what we're focusing on more is long-term projects that volunteers can come in and say, okay, I would like to help with revamping this garden or putting together a garden guide. Or making the website look nice, things like that. Because a pollinator project is at its core, very volunteer-led. It's something that requires people to say, oh, I'm kind of interested in this. And then we provide the framework for them to do it in the most impactful way possible that we can manage.
Thank you. I can agree with you on the long-term projects. We are working on that as well because a lot of our volunteer is currently kind of like a one-off like river cleanup, you know. It happens, you know, in January and then it won't happen for a bit. So we are definitely working on those long-term projects. But as far as events from Quail Watersheds, we will also be doing an Earth Day event. We will be doing two. The first one will be at the farmers market. I will be there tabling, and you guys can come and make seed bombs to throw around. They have native wildflower seeds in them. They were given to us by Phoenix Youth Corps and Umpqua Native Plant Partnership. So that's amazing. And then we will also be at the Aviva Health Center for the electric vehicle ride. So you can come and test your cars out, and we'll also have a stream table there for people to look at river flow, which is really exciting. So I think that'll be the first time that our stream table's out in the public for everyone to go see it.
What's the stream table?
It pumps water from the bottom to the top, and it has medium in it. Where and then we also put like plastic trees and logs and stuff, but essentially the water flows through it and shapes it. And so you can observe erosion, you can observe water sequestration and the medium, the soil. We've done fun stuff where we push a lot of water through and it floods everything out, and we can see what like this is not my area of expertise. Cindy Hawes leads it, but you can see like shelves in the water being formed by all the erosion, and like the embankments will cave in and everything. I spent hours there trying to use it and learn from it and creating activities for it. So it's a lot of fun. I've gotten to use it about 3 times now, and I'm really excited for the public to get to stand there and observe it.
That is super cool. I can imagine you could chuck a couple of sticks in to model like how a beaver dam will impact the water flow and like create a little like stagnant bit of water where salmon could spawn or whatever. That is so cool.
Yep, it is really cool. We've actually done one activity so far with some first, second, and third graders, and they loved it. They had a lot of fun. So, yeah, we'll have Earth Day events. So you guys can, I mean, Ethan, you're kind of out of town, but Tegan, if you're available, you can always come and check it out.
Considered me there.
Yeah. So, you guys have anything you want to kind of talk about?
Would you mind if I gave a shout out to kind of the volunteer stuff that UCAN's got going on in case anyone
Yeah.
listening would like to volunteer?
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. So for Head Start, there's a lot of volunteer opportunities there. There's obviously classroom volunteering, just kind of helping with the kids. But if that's not your forte, they've also got kitchen volunteers, clerical volunteers, maintenance volunteers. So there's a bit of a spread there. If you want to help out, but you don't want to work directly with children, there's all sorts of stuff there. And then the food bank could use some distribution warehouse people just to kind of help with the warehousing. It's been a while, but if I remember right, if you volunteer at the food bank for long enough, they will pay for your forklift certification. So don't 100% quote me on that, but that's what I remember hearing. And then they've also got a volunteer position open for their mobile food outpost. It's like a food bank in a trailer that they just drive around and they go out and stop places and give food to people. So there's also an opportunity there. And then there's the Medicaid transportation that could use more drivers. And their thing is kind of like AmeriCorps in the way that it's a volunteer opportunity, but you're getting paid per mile to do it. So it more than reimburses your gas and you get to drive Medicaid clients to and from different appointments, and I think at the moment it's mostly doctor's appointments and whatnot. But yeah, that's what we've got going on at the moment.
Awesome, thank you. Do you mind if I ask if there's like a required amount of volunteer hours they have to put in or a minimum or anything?
I think there's something like that for the Medicaid transportation. That's more of like a consistent thing. As far as the food bank goes, I would assume that you can just kind of go there and volunteer, and they're probably pretty flexible. And then I am more certain that if you're just looking for kind of a one-off thing or like a short-term kind of thing, that a Head Start would be really good for that, because they've, from what I've seen, occasionally they've just got little odd jobs that come up that they could use a couple extra hands on.
Wonderful, thank you.
Yeah.
Ethan, did you have anything?
Yeah, I have I have a couple of tips and little bits of advice for how to create a good environment for pollinators, if now's an all right time for that.
Yeah, go for
Cool.
it.
Yeah, thank you. So an issue that I deal with, and something that I know a lot of other people deal with when it comes to environmental conservation, is it's inaccessible because not everyone has a 10-acre backyard or even a garden. And because, I mean, I sure don't. So figuring out what you can do without space as a resource and still help the environment a bit is stressful. And feeling like you can't do anything is stressful. So I have a little bit of advice for people who don't have a garden or other outdoor spaces that they can turn into pollinator habitat. First off, is that pollinators kind of need two things. They need forage, food, so pollen and nectar, and they also need a place to raise their offspring. So if you don't have a lot of space, you can still kind of provide this in a couple ways. You can provide food with like a hummingbird feeder, or if you have any access to the like an outdoor space, then planting flowers is a great way to planting native flowers is a great way to provide food resources. And if you don't have that, then what you can still do to preserve nesting and forage habitat is keep areas undisturbed. So if you're going on a walk, stay on the trail. If you're going on a hike, stay on the trail, or just leaving some space as undisturbed as possible is a great way to preserve some of that habitat. Leaving leaves on the ground, reducing your yard work, you can help pollinators that way, because it if you just leave leaves and twigs on the ground, then you can technically say you're creating habitat. And there are also other things you can do, like being an advocate and contributing to citizen science. Like there are a couple of programs going on, like Nature's Notebook, Project Budaburst, and Monarch Watch, where you're able to take pictures or write down information about what you see outside. Like, oh, I saw a bee on this flower. Let me take a picture of it, submit it to the website. Great, you just contributed to science. And there are a lot of programs like that where you can help contribute to a body of research that is constantly being updated, and helping conservationists get an idea of what requirements different pollinators have. So, bees, butterflies, moths, wasps, flies, hummingbirds, beetles. Did I already say beetles? I don't know. But they can all be pollinators and all have different ecosystem requirements that even if you don't have a lot of resources, you can still help out with. Sorry for the ramble there. You made the mistake of letting me talk about my favorite thing, bugs.
No, I think it's perfect. I actually really enjoy it, and I like getting to hear what people are passionate about. So, I actually don't have a lot of room either in my backyard. It is bigger than others, but it's still very small. So I have three garden boxes that I grow plants and veggies and fruits and veggies in, but I wanted to have a specific pollinator area. And I have a corner in the back, but it gets a lot of shade and it's not good. And so I upcycled some old gutters I had and painted them and cleaned them up a bit and then drilled them to my fence. And so the inside of my fence has this gutter and I put annual flowers in it. And they grow, and they actually are really nice because it provides a barrier at the top of the fence too for like visual. But it's great because then I can just sit there and watch all the pollinator species come in and get all those plants and pollen. And it seems to work really well. And there's enough space in there for the plants to grow for a bit. So by the time the season starts to wind down and change, they're dying off. I tried strawberries for a bit, but it just took over. So. But yeah, that works really well and it seems to help. I think I'm the only one in my local area that is growing like pollinator plants. So it feels like a big accomplishment when they all come up and start blooming and I get to see all the insects out there.
Absolutely. And something that was pointed out on the OSU Extension Service website is that integrating, well, creating pollinator habitat is actually a really great way to enhance your public spaces or your own backyard. Like you mentioned that you're growing vegetables. Great. That is pollinator habitat. If you're growing squash or another like cucurbits, then you are providing floral resources for native bees to access. And actually integrating pollinator habitat and pollinator friendly plants like you're doing is really helpful because it can enhance your crop yield. You can get larger, better vegetables from your garden because you're attracting a higher diversity of pollinators that can actually get into the flower and collect that pollen and transfer it between flowers. So what you're doing is act is like yes, you should absolutely feel proud of that. What you're doing is creating what could essentially be a pocket of hospitable habitat for pollinators in what can otherwise be a fairly inhospitable world. And that's something that Pollinator Project Rogue Valley really advocates for, is creating pathways of pollinator habitat, because you don't have to bulldoze a whole city and replace it with pollinator friendly plants to really support every pollinator. What you need to do is create an abundance of diverse habitat. And by having pockets like your own backyard, you are doing just that. So that's something that anyone with a bit of space, with a garden, can do. They can enhance their own backyard with pollinator habitat while also improving the ecosystem or services that they are receiving from their garden, whether it be aesthetics or food.
Do you mind if I ask a question to Ethan real quick?
Please do.
Go for it.
So if someone's got like a farm or something that they've got a whole bunch of crops growing on, would there be a better crop yield if they were to, say, like border their farmland with a bunch of really really pollinator friendly plants? Like, could that be like a tactic that they could use to get better crop yields and support pollinators and just kind of a win-win situation for everyone?
The answer is absolutely yes. There is an article that I have here called Associations Between Blooming Plants and Their Bee Visitors in a Riparian Ecosystem in Eastern Oregon. And it cites a couple of other bits of research that say that providing this key habitat for bees and other pollinators can improve the diversity of pollinators going to your fields. So things like alfalfa especially benefit from this because when you have a singular crop in a huge area, then that isn't ideal habitat for most pollinators. But by creating habitat surrounding it or interwoven with with your crops, then yeah, you are attracting a higher diversity, and through that, more diverse pollination functions. So something that I like to talk about a lot is this thing called buzz pollination. It's something that bumblebees and a lot of other native bees can do, but the European honeybee, which, surprise, is from Europe, it can't do buzz pollination. And what that is a honeybee, I mean, a bumblebee will go up to like a blueberry and flex its flight muscles really, really quickly, not to fly, but to kind of like a pepper shaker or like a salt shaker, shake out the pollen, and otherwise the pollen won't really fall out of the anther of the plant, of the flower. And when I say that planting pollinator-friendly plants attracts a di diverse range of pollinator functions, that's what I mean. Because different pollinators can do different things. Some will have long tongues, some will have short tongues and be able to fit inside of different flowers. And there are so many different interactions with so many different species between so many species of flower and pollinator that you can take advantage of in your farm.
Good to know. Thank you.
Yeah. So if you happen to be if you happen to have an almond orchard in your backyard, then you can I recommend attracting native pollinators.
So, Ethan, you mentioned the pollinator species along riparian ecosystems. So, Umpqua Watersheds does a lot of work on riparian and restoration on wetland areas. The first thing that really came to mind to me was I just recently did a project with BLM and the Roseburg Parks and Rec Department. We worked on cutting willow trees down here in town and then moving them, once they grow roots, of course, moving them and replanting them along Rock Creek where the Archie Creek fire had burned everything. And so within about 2 years, they'll start providing shade for species that are in the river there. So I was wondering if we planted pollinator species up there as well, I'm assuming it would help to create a nice corridor for all the pollinator species to travel along the river.
Absolutely. Riparian zones, so the area of wildlife, the ecosystem along streams and creeks, rivers, they are really important habitat for, I mean, everything. They support a super high biodiversity because of the nutrient cycling, the different elevations, and the abundance of water. So they're great for the environment, but they also provide a lot of really important human services like water and recreation and just aesthetics. So improving these corridors, these ecosystem corridors, is really, really impactful to a lot of different species, including humans. One of the best ways to improve these corridors of habitat is, yes, by integrating a variety of especially native plants. So, different flowering trees and shrubs and forbs, these can all provide some of those ecosystem services, whether it's stabilizing the soil, preventing erosion, or attracting pollinators and helping their populations, or just attracting insects in general that birds can eat, then increasing the bird population in that area. So, yeah, planting a diversity of flowering plants and pollinator-friendly plants is really important and helpful for these ecosystems. And a lot of research is actually being done in kind of Eastern Oregon regarding what plants and what pollinators are really attracted to these areas. So you can look up articles and find that, okay, this species of the 500 species of bee in Oregon really like this one plant, but this other plant attracts a whole bunch of other bees and butterflies. So maybe we should plant a lot of the one that attracts a huge diversity of pollinator plants, and also plant a little bit of the one that only attracts like this species of bee. And it is a way to reestablish native ecosystems from so many different angles, from the plant, from the pollinator, from the just ecosystem function level. And that's so important to so many species, including us.
I agree. Thank you. Do you think it also increases the amount of prey for amphibians and species found in the water?
So one thing that you mentioned was how you're creating, by moving up these willows upstream, you're creating shade. What that does is it can actually help reduce the temperature of the stream itself, and that is really important to a lot of species, including salmon, but also macroinvertebrates, things that will, little bugs and things that will live in the water. And those can be really important prey for a lot of fish. One of my favorite insects is trichopterans. I think they're the caddisflies that create those shells out of sticks and little pebbles.
I love those.
They're so cool. They can they have a pretty narrow range of water quality that they can survive in. So you can actually tell, kind of get an idea of how healthy the ecosystem is by the presence and abundance of the of caddisfly larvae. So yeah, by creating more suitable habitat for invertebrates and other species, you are also creating more suitable habitat for the things that eat those, whether they be fish or frogs or salamanders, or if you go to other reptiles, you can go to birds and lizards.
That's a very good point. Thank you. So while we're on the topic of like riparian areas, I wanted to mention that Umpqua Watersheds, in partnership with a few other organizations, has an event coming up on May 12th and May 13th. It's called the Stream Amphibians and Turtles of Southwest Oregon Conference. It'll be at the Jacoby Auditorium. And it is free, but we recommend registering ahead of time so we know how many people will be there. May 12th is a presentation, and we have some amazing guest speakers. And the Saturday, the 13th, will be a field demonstration. So everyone gets to go out in the field. So that'll be really fun. And if you guys are available or free, you're more than welcome to attend.
That is very tempting.
Yes, I'm really bummed I won't get to be there for the field de demonstration, but I'm going to enjoy the presentation on Friday. We
I'll
will
throw that in my
have,
calendar.
oh, wonderful. Thank you. We'll have a zoologist there, and we'll have someone from the U.S. Forest Service working at the research station, and then Cindy Hawes from Umpqua Community College. And Janice Reed from Umpqua Watersheds. So they'll all be helping to organize this event and give presentations. Tegan, do you have anything you want to talk about?
Later today, I am going to another committee meeting for Make a Difference Day, kind of plan out what we're doing for next year. So,
Nice.
anyone who happens to be listening to this, keep a lookout for any Make a Difference Day stuff because there is all sorts of things going on. We're hopefully going to make it bigger, more expansive. That's the plan for next year.
How do we learn about like events or activities with Make a Difference? Is it on the website or Facebook?
There is a Facebook page that actually I'm probably going to bring that up today, is making maybe a website for it as well. if we've got the resources for that. But yeah, just keep a lookout for that kind of stuff.
Will do, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
So we're past the halfway mark in our service terms, and things are going to be winding up in July. I have a lot of upcoming events, and I'm excited for the next AmeriCorps to take over. Have you guys been enjoying your service term, and are you sad it's coming in to an end soon?
I suppose I'll go first. Yeah, it's a bit half and half because I've really enjoyed what I've been doing so far. And I plan on being available to the next person who takes over my position, just as kind of a resource to help put them in the right direction. But on the other hand, there's also the college money that I get at the end of it, and I'm really excited to start pursuing my engineering degree. So it's a little bit of both.
Do you know where you'll be going to school at for your engineering degree?
I'll either be sticking around at UCC or I might just have a change of scenery and go up to LBCC. So I'm
Nice.
still kind of weighing my options there. And then I'll probably
Good luck.
transfer over to OIT after that.
Good luck with your degree. I
Thank
wish
you.
you success. Yeah. What about you, Ethan?
I'm kind of doing a similar thing. One, I've really enjoyed working, sorry, serving up on your project and getting to know the volunteers and learn so much. And I'd like to continue doing that and contributing as much as possible because it's a volunteer organization. I can still volunteer and hang out every once in a while. But I am excited to start pursuing more like Tegan education stuff and looking into maybe eventually going into entomology and being Dr. Bugs or whatever. Really finishing up my environmental science and policy degree at Southern Oregon University, and then I'm going to be minoring in biology and getting a better idea of how humans are interacting with the environment and with organisms and how we can solve problems by looking to nature for solutions and stuff. So yeah, like Tegan, I'm excited to continue doing the sort of stuff I'm doing with Pollinator Project, but also learning about more things I'm interested in.
Wonderful, thank you. That's so interesting that we're all kind of going on back to school and continuing our education. I myself am going to finish off my bachelor's in natural resources, fish and wildlife conservation. So I will also be sticking around and volunteering and helping the next AmeriCorps get situated, but my focus will be on my degree. So then I can hopefully start pursuing my next degree after I get my bachelor's. So I wish you guys both luck in your future endeavors and have really enjoyed being a part of this cohort with you guys. I think I'm gonna wrap it up. So if there's anything you want to add or a shout out or anything, we can do that now.
What is your favorite fish?
You know, I want to say salmon. Just because I love salmon and they're beautiful. But I really like suckerfish, like all species of suckerfish. They're so unique and fun. I mean, as far as stating native to like this area, yeah, I do like salmon and suckerfish. Since being with Umpqua Watersheds, I've learned a lot more about lampreys, and they're pretty cool too. Yeah, but I'm actually more of a mammals person. I wanted to become a full wildlife biologist, but I thought it would be good to do both fish and wildlife, kind of a broader aspect. And much like you, I want to understand the overall impacts of humans and what we're doing to the environment. And so that's kind of my focus, is understanding how we impact the environment and impact the wildlife that live in that environment. So that's kind of my focus of study. I hope someday to go beyond and get my doctorate and everything. But for now, I just got my associate's. Now I'm finishing up that bachelor's. So.
It just occurred to me that being a like a nature conservationist living in LA would be kind of the worst. I don't know, just a thought that popped up in my head. That would not be fun. Yeah,
No,
I
and
think I'm gonna.
I definitely like Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon's really nice. Lots of trees everywhere. Went to Arizona for a couple weeks, like a year or two ago, and it was interesting and different for a while, but I missed the trees.
Yeah. Well, thank you both for being guests on Living Downstream,
Yeah, of course.
and
Thanks for
good
having
luck
us.
with the rest. Yeah, good luck with the rest of your service term.
Thank you so much for having us on. Have a great rest of your day and rest of your service term. And I hope you get to, I don't know, pat a lamprey because they're freaky.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Living Downstream.